please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
It's Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 461. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined today by Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and streaming live as we always do at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
I am hanging in the bathroom.
It is Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. On the show today, we have our next door neighbors and extremely dear friends from the City Theater here to talk about their performance and their production of As You Like It. And later on, we are honored to welcome one of the cast members of Broadway Across America's Book of Mormon. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Knoxville, Nashville, and Bucktown. I don't know where that is.
There's no other half there.
Do you remember where Bucktown is?
There's a Bucktown in Atlanta.
There is a Bucktown in Atlanta, but I was thinking of Chicago.
Oh, there is a Bucktown in Chicago.
There is a Bucktown in Chicago. That's where my favorite little restaurant is called Club Lucky.
Oh, I know where that is.
Yeah, it's on Wabanzia. I go. That's why I moved to the neighborhood I lived in Chicago. Well, welcome, world traveler.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell the folks where you were.
I went to Iceland.
Iceland, where it's cold and frigid and icy.
And funny, I always talk about how snow is a four-letter word and how much I hate the cold. And yes, it was very cold. And you were very bundled, but I had a ball.
I was not very bundled. I was here in Austin, the land of the heat.
So it was cold there.
Cool. And you rode some horses.
I did.
And you saw some lights.
I did. I saw the northern lights. Whoa, that was epic. Epic.
Epic? Would you say it was theatrical?
No, it was epic. Beyond theatrical.
Theatrical couldn't be epic.
I haven't seen that epic on stage.
All right, never mind.
Almost Maine. You can get the Northern Lights through that.
There you go.
It's not as epic. This was epic.
There you go. So you can't. There's no winning, so don't even try. Well, let's introduce the disembodied voices we just heard. That voice you just heard was Levi Gore. Hi, Levi.
Hello, Lisa.
We also here have Andrew Goldberg. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
You looked at me like all of a sudden I thought I had the wrong name. I've been in Andrew hell today, it appears. So I can't seem to do right by anybody named Andrew. I want to thank Tracy Schultz.
Tracy was in here jamming today.
He was jamming. He was helping in for Kim Simpson and doing a great job. We love our Tracy Schultz. He's part of our family here.
We do. I'm going to give him a jazz hand through the glass. He can't see me.
Yeah, he can see you. He's just not looking at you.
No, I'm too short, and the stuff's right
there
where
you
that
go.
Is.
Well, that is lost on our radio audience. Yeah. But believe me, radio audience.
He can't see me.
There is glass between us and Tracy Schultz and stuff between us and that glass. So we had an opening this week. Did you notice?
I did notice.
We actually had a couple of openings.
I was like, I think there was more than one, though, right?
Well, kind of. Yep, there was only one on Broadway.
Right, but there were some other...
And it was a little show called Carousel.
A little show.
Yeah, I am just not a fan of Carousel.
You know, it's really kind of funny. Me neither. And my aunt Mamie loves it, and she was actually just talking about it all this week, too. Oh, I just love it. And I'm like, what is it? I try to get, what is it? Music. The music is...
You and I are in the minority here. Most people really, really love it.
I know, but I want them. I just want to know why different people love it, so I can try.
I believe we have one here. He was trying to say something.
Yeah, I don't like Carousel either. I'm not a.
Oh, you said you don't like
yes.
it.
Yes,
I do not.
I lump Carousel. Well, and they're both Rodgers and Hammerstein in Oklahoma together.
I don't like that either.
So it's so depressing.
Yes.
Yeah. But
I like depressing shows, so I don't know what's wrong with me. I just, yeah, I try. I respect it.
And here's the bad news.
I just don't want to see it.
Here, oh, no, here it is. Okay, so the review were mixed, pretty much. Some didn't like it, some did like it. But this was the, actually in Ben Brantley's review, he said, he called it the half-terrific revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. And it stars Jit...
I'm just kind of like, half-terrific.
Well, because as you go through, when you read the whole thing, you're going, wow, he really loves it. He really loves it. And then he starts talking about the last third of the play.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
says,
laughing at the
not
term.
Not so much.
Half-terrific.
It was half-terrific. But it starred Jesse Mueller, who everybody will know from Waitress.
Yes.
And Joshua Henry, who people will know from Scottsboro Boys and from Violet, which, interestingly enough, was on our show last week.
Yeah, well, yes. Yep. With the Nick Mayo and the,
yep,
the group.
So let me just read this one paragraph from Ben Brantley's review.
Okay.
The tragic inevitability of Carousel has seldom come across as warmly or as chillingly as it does in this vividly reimagined revival. As directed by Jack O'Brien and choreographed by Justin Peck, with thoughtful and powerful performances by Mr. Henry and Ms. Mueller, the love story at the show's center has never seemed quite as ill-starred or at the same time as sexy.
Oh.
It sounds
or
nice.
At the same
that's
time.
A wonderful review.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said. But according to him, it falls
it
apart
goes,
at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, oh, it starts off so nice. Yeah. I mean, Jack O'Brien.
Well, Jack O'Brien and Justin Peck have equal billing, the yeah. choreographer and the director, which is really good. Mm-hmm. Playing Mr. Snow and what's her name, Carrie, is Lindsay Mendez and Alexander Geminani, who did a good job. And Renee Fleming, the opera singer, is in it.
Yeah, it's a crazy wow. It's a crazy cast. I was in New York. The commercial
CC,
was on like every other second. And I was like, see, it looks interesting, mm-hmm. but I just don't.
Well, one of the, some of the stuff they're talking about, first of all, I'm not familiar enough with it, like intimately familiar enough with it to know the story, but some of the mm-hmm. things I heard, they got rid of two scenes that were pretty, did some, in these people's opinion, pretty important exposition in terms of what this building the story forward, and they left those out. They also increased, is it soliloquy? One of the numbers, they added a whole nother dance number to it, which they, some loved, some didn't love. Hmm. And this set was by Santo Loquasto.
Well, that's a great name.
That's a great name.
It is.
Santo Loquasto. Let's see what else I wanted to say about this. I did have something else here. It's interesting. So, the other thing they did differently is the gatekeeper, or whatever the guy's name is, that comes in from heaven in the end, and now has a role throughout. It actually starts, the whole show starts in heaven. I don't think it's any secret that he gets killed at
no,
the robbery.
No, it's not.
But that character stays out throughout. But at the end...
Although there's someone in their living room going, Lisa!
Spoiler.
At the very end, the if you remember when what's his name? Who's the lead character? The woman.
I can't remember all these names again. It's like.
All right, hold on. Anyway, when she is in the future, Billy is dead. She's got a child, and they're watching from. Julie Jordan, Julie and her daughter are talking, and they talk about how. Troubled her dad was, and he actually hit her earlier in this particular production. You don't see mm-hmm. it, but it's talked about. But they talk about how in the original text, and they didn't change it here, they said that it's possible to be hit loud and hard and not hurt you at all, which is a little tough to talk about in our today's current age. Basically, yeah. It's saying it's possible for someone to love you and hit you at the same time, and I think that's a little fraught. But they say it's delivered. He says it's delivered quietly and unconvincingly, almost as it's hoping it's passed unnoticed, which I kind of like.
But like, that's not something you can just sweep aside.
It didn't sound like a sweeping aside. It sounded like she says it but doesn't really mean it. So she's saying this thing to try to make her daughter feel better.
Yeah.
But doesn't really mean it, which I think is sort of an interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm. I saw my aunt in this show, maybe 25, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this was only maybe it was probably a decade after her divorce, but it was only a few years into her essentially recovering from the same thing. She
right.
had some trouble in her marriage, and there was probably a little, I mean, it was a very similar situation. It was hard to watch the show, given what she'd been through.
I think it's just a tough show to watch.
It is.
Some of the other critics said, the New York Daily News, Joe Dominowitz said, Carousel has such a glorious score that the music always shines bright, even in a revival as wobbly as this one. Marilyn Stasso for Variety said, audiences encountering Joshua Henry's electrifying performance, and he did routinely across the board, both he and Jesse Mueller got good notices, will long remember the experience. In this new Broadway revival of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel, Henry shows off the exceptionally beautiful voice of a genuine actor-singer, a voice that, while warm and mellow, can also soar with joy and tremble in despair, which I think is a nice line, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, I won't be going to see it when I go to New York.
Mm, me neither.
That's it. But other people will. People like this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different strokes for different folks.
Different strokes.
That's what makes the world go round.
Okay.
It's all good.
There was another opening. I'm sorry. I forgot about Children of the Lesser God, which opened last Wednesday, I think, which did not get
such great notices. Yeah, no, I didn't see anything
really. And it's directed by Kenny Leon, and he didn't really get a lot of good quotes. The woman that plays the Marley Matlin role, who did it in the movie with John Rubenstein, is Lauren Ridloff. She says, her ASL is so superb, her fluency and expressiveness make the English speakers around her seem, as one of them actually calls her, dumb, which I think is fun.
Mm-hmm. I saw an interview on the local news up in New York last week, and I was like, I kind of adore this woman.
So the show, if people don't know it, are y'all familiar with it?
I'm not familiar with it.
I mean,
You mean what?
Familiar, yes.
Okay, well, it takes place in a deaf school. The woman, the protagonist, is an ex-student, now a maintenance worker at the school. And if you know anything about the deaf community, there's a big, there's a lot of controversy around trying to make deaf people speak vocal English. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of deaf people that say no. It's, you know, being deaf is not a disability. It's mm-hmm. just a different thing. And so there are many deaf people that just say, no, I'm not going to talk, and I'm only going to speak in ASL. And if you want to talk to me, you should learn ASL. And that's what this character is. There's a teacher that comes to the school. There's a love story around it. And he is your typical arrogant, you should be speaking English kind of guy.
Do it all, yeah.
Interestingly enough, there's another interesting take on this. And so this play was in the late 70s, early 80s, I think. And so it's a little dated in terms of the issues surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do interesting, there's a, he calls it Mr. Leone's color conscious casting. So the woman is mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
The actress that plays him and the actor that plays the man is white. And there's the whole power dynamic around race at the same time as hearing and disability, which I think is very interesting.
Interesting.
They didn't like the set. Call it cheap looking set.
I saw that and I was like, oh, that's cool.
For an expensive show, that can't be good.
Yeah. So, maybe we just watch the movie.
Maybe
just watch the movie. The other opening happened across the pond.
Across the pond.
Which I think is
across
kind of...
Across the pond.
Across the pond.
Across the pond.
The show is called Untold.
Untold.
Have you heard of it?
Yes, I have,
no,
I feel
I
like.
Haven't.
Yeah. It's a Tina Turner story.
Ah, that's what it is. Okay, I was like, because I know the Tina open, but that's what it's called. There you go.
So here's something interesting. So... Tina Turner was not born with the name Tina Turner.
No, I knew that.
Do you know what it was?
I don't remember, but I do.
Anna Mae Bullock.
Anna Mae Bullock.
Do you know where she grew up in Tennessee? What the name of the town is?
Don't remember.
Oh, come on. Anybody. Take some guesses.
Tallahassee.
No.
Nashville.
No. Until y'all say Nutbush, you're not going to be right. Nutbush, Tennessee.
That explains everything.
Which was my sorority name in college.
I forgot about that.
Anyway, the woman that plays Tina Turner supposedly is excellent, Adrienne Warren, and they liked the show.
I was about to say they loved it. It got me excited. Did you watch any of the Donna Summer musical footage?
No.
Interesting.
What in what way?
I don't know. I mean, I just saw one thing and then I saw another that I like. So I don't know, but I think
not a big Donna Summer fan. I lived through that era.
Said Michael liked it. I watched one with one number used all three Donnas because there's three different Donna incarnations.
Funny, so they do that with the Cher show as well.
Yes, yes, all yes. All three Chers. But Tina, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I guess I'm taking this a little out of order. That song that we played at the beginning, had any of you ever heard it before, Michael in the Bathroom?
I know what this is from. I know this because it's the Jersey connection from the Red Bank and everything. So So.
Well, except I'd never heard of it. So this
kind
is
of fascinating.
This is a show called, oh God, just lost its name. The Be More Chill. And it was, it's never had a professional, it's had one semi-professional production in Jersey. And it has taken off. They made a cast album and it has gotten more plays than
it was like
half of Hamilton's, which, you know, so here it is.
It's from like 2015,
they got 100 million streams. Mm-hmm. It got. So Hamilton got 2.3 billion streams. Dear Evan Hansen got 211 million, but like Heather's the Musical, like a quarter of theirs, 23. I had never heard of it. Evidently, it's very popular with tweens.
Mm-hmm.
And it is called Be More Chill, and it's about a teenager who takes a pill to make him cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's it sounds real interesting, and evidently those of us of a certain age are the only ones that don't know of it. And
well,
that sounds like a lot of 80s movies. It's a pill instead of like mm-hmm. changing your clothes, or like I forget the name of the movie where the guy pays a girl to date him to become really cool. It just seems like
Can't Buy Me Love.
Can't Buy Me Love. It just seems like a very familiar story, but I didn't see how that resonated a lot with...
Well, there's only a handful of storylines out there. We just keep repeating them.
Yeah.
Speaking of...
But it's going... They're now taking it off Broadway.
Yeah, they're going to take it to the Pershing Square. It opens July 26th.
And I think the theater in Red Bank is still part of it and producing it or something like that. I don't...
One would assume.
I believe so. I was reading it in the paper the other day.
And that's New Jersey's Two River Theater.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the darn name, but I thank you very much.
Because you know, I didn't live in Red Bank. I worked in Red Bank for a while.
Red Bank's a pretty little town.
Harry Potter.
Oh, you know, are you going to talk about how much this bad boy costs? Because, you know...
The most expensive straight play in history.
$68 million, more than the Spider-Man kerfuffle.
Was it more than Spider-Man?
I think so. I think it was 61 or 67. I think just... But still, that was a crazy musical of 3 years of stuff.
68.5 million.
Oh my gosh. And you had to go to two different shows to get the whole kit and caboodle.
But that's... 33 million of that is to redo the theater. And it's very interesting what they had to do to get them at the theater. The Lyric Theater, which... How's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark?
I know, and part of that 60-something was them redoing the theater.
No, that was... Oh, part of theirs.
Yes, yeah. That's what I find this all so funny, and I was like, oh my.
But the Lyric courted, they actually spent 20-some-odd million dollars to ask Cirque du Soleil to close Paramore early so that they could court. There were three theaters courting this show, and they really wanted it, and they won. Hmm. So it cost a lot of money. But one of the things I love this wording, and who wrote this? This is Paulson, I think. Michael Paulson is talking about the renovation of the theater, and evidently, well, not evidently, I was there. I saw Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. It wasn't very, the renovation they did, the theater itself wasn't very good. Nice. They wanted to bring the theater back to its sort of Victorian kind of style mm-hmm. with vaulted ceilings and all this stuff. They moved the entrance from 42nd Street to 43rd Street. And
they had to do some of the ceiling and vault it more too because of the flying apparatus.
Right. So evidently this is a huge... well, I don't know. Yeah, they would do flying. Mm-hmm. Huge technical.
There's some definite flying in Harry Potter.
So
on a broomstick for a little Quidditch. Sorry, I do love me some Harry Potter, but I'm not paying for that.
So they added a whole bunch of boxes, and they're described as a necklace of boxes, which I sort of like that.
A necklace of boxes. You have to say a necklace of boxes.
They're also doing another production in Melbourne.
Oh, I'd love to go see it there.
Mm. Yep. So there are 40 actors in this straight play.
Oh, my God.
It's a big
cast. 26 crew, 5 stage managers, 16 people to wardrobe, $3.5 million for advertising, $3 million for salaries, $8 million for general administrative costs. I want some of this money.
Lisa, I know. I was sitting there the other morning going, oh my. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I got a couple more things that I want to talk about. One of which is, have you heard of this show, Afterglow in New York off Broadway? It's been playing for a few years. It's playing for 1 year.
I was like, it's been playing for about a year.
Yeah, so it's about a gay couple, and it's actually relatively dark. But they found their audiences dropping off on Thursday nights.
Oh, it's because of RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's right.
Because RuPaul's Drag Race came back on. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Lisa, I read this in the paper on Monday morning or Sunday morning. I was dying.
So they stopped their Thursday nights. They added a Tuesday night performance, and their audiences are back up.
Nice.
I died laughing. I was like, oh my goodness, that's too funny. Yes.
I think that's brilliant, actually.
I would think that RuPaul would like that, too.
Sad that people aren't watching The Flash, Black Lightning, and Legion, but...
Never heard of either any of those.
Yeah, but RuPaul's Drag Race is kind of everything. I get it. That's hilarious. Yeah.
And we're not going to talk a lot about this, but this is for you.
Oh, crime!
Yeah, crime.
We have a crime section today.
Well, it's kind of crime. It's courtroom. So
it was enough to warrant the lovely sound.
Yeah, we got the lovely sound.
Yes.
There it is. So this is the whole thing about To Kill a Mockingbird, Scott Rudin's production that Aaron Sorkin wrote.
Yes.
So they're in this bitter rivalry to start. She sued. They countersued. Evidently, Harper Lee, the person that's running Harper Lee's estate, does not sound like a... Yeah. I mean, Scott Rudin is no picnic.
No, but I feel like she's been out after everybody. Right. He is not the only one.
Well, and there's all that controversy about she released that second novel of
Watchmen.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. The sequel.
Everybody's pretty sure that Harper Lee did not want that released.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, but Mr. Rudin has offered to stage a production in the courthouse judge can see that it doesn't stray from the storyline.
You know what? That is everything.
She says that Atticus Finch's character isn't adhering to that story. So do we know what his... How that's playing out?
So Atticus Finch in the movie, and Gregory Peck falls into this as well somewhere as well, is this idealistic, there's no negative stains against him. And I think this play is a little bit more realistic in terms of character study. Yeah. And I think that's maybe what she's objecting to. Last thing I want to talk about right now is Equity's push to add ensemble to the Tonys. What do y'all think of that?
I love it.
I
got so excited. I sent it while I was out of town and forwarded to Amy. And I was like, too bad this wasn't around for the Civil War because they would have won. Because swear hands down the best ensemble ever.
They actually want to do ensemble and chorus, and there is a, and they've even written down the difference between the two because it can be a little confusing. Mm-hmm. But chorus is basically singing and dancing, and ensemble is the entire company, including the principals,
like the Civil War.
Just like the Civil War. Mm-hmm. So y'all are all for it?
Oh,
I'm all for it. I think it's a wonderful addition.
I think it's long overdue. I thought that was. I'm
team
like
effort as a whole. I'm sorry.
It's
a whole separate part of it. I mean, it's all one, but how well the whole thing works together is just as important as an individual or any particular department.
There's shows that wouldn't work without a really good ensemble or a good cast, such as The Civil War.
I will tell you this, and we're going to talk about this in Today in Theater History as well, is Indecent is a great example of that.
Exactly.
Amazing. The Band's Visit, another example of all that. So I'm for it. The problem is, or not one of the problems is, so if you are in an ensemble and your show wins that award, are you then allowed to claim that you are a Tony winner? And you're not really. I mean, part of the thing is like you've got the people that are getting.
I would walk around and say I've won a Tony as part of an ensemble.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I would wear that as a badge. Oh, so gosh, why yes. not?
Yeah, I'm with it. I will say this publicly, as an ex-stage manager, I do not want a stage manager award.
Well, I'll make sure you don't get one. You already have the leading actress, remember?
That's right. So let's take a little break. Let's listen to a little bit of Carousel, shall we?
Oh, shall we? If
I loved you. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps, Nicole Shiro.
Nicole Shiro.
We've been hanging out here with Andrew Goldberg and Levi Gore. Yes. Now we're going to switch our attention to those two same named gentlemen okay. and their show next door at the City Theater called As You Like It, written by...
As You What?
As You Like It?
I'm just kidding. I was playing with you. Yeah, no.
You got me scared. I went, no! I think it's called As You Like It.
I was doing a bit, failed miserably.
No, you wah, didn't. You didn't. It's totally on Let's, me.
Why don't you try that intro again? I ruined that.
No, we're good. As You Like It by William mm-hmm. H. Shakespeare.
Yes.
Probably indeed. Didn't know his middle name is Horace.
Horace? That is a new one for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Horace. Interesting bit of scholarly advice.
BH, they used to call him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old BH.
So, As You Like It. Is a great Shakespeare comedy, is it not?
It's a wonderful. It's one of the best comedies that he has in his canon, and it's got everything. It's got humor. It's got slapstick,
which is a really good thing for a comedy to have.
Which is really great. If you don't have it in a comedy, then it falls apart.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's this great pastoral comedy with great slapstick, a little bit of country humor, making fun of people that don't have a lot, and it's just a great juxtaposition between haves and have-nots.
And oddly enough, for Shakespeare comedy, there's gender bending.
There is. It's such
it's so rare.
It's a really so it, yeah, and it's a little bit different because it's them fights. I mean, it's very progressive for the time it's written. Gender bend some people here, fall them in love, yep. don't really understand what they're feeling, and then oh my gosh, we're about to. Old genders, but it's really
old genders. By the way, sorority name in college.
It teaches the valuable lesson that to get the man you want, the best thing to do is to dress like another man and get him to fall in love with you as a man, and then let him know that you're a woman.
Well, there you go. How wonderfully progressive of William Shakespeare for his yes. time.
I love that. As You Like It makes me giggle.
I don't know when the last time was that I saw it.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been done quite a bit in this town.
I know.
Which isn't, I mean, we do have it a little bit differently. Instead of just traditional, I said in the 1930s,
mm-hmm.
there's a
so, but hold that thought for a moment. Mm-hmm. We should tell people that you are the director of this piece, Levi Gore.
Yes, I am.
And while we're stopped, Andrew, what role do you play? Darth Vader, by the look of your costume right now.
Yes. In addition to Darth Vader, I also play the Shepherd Corin.
Uh-huh.
And the... I guess you could say rejected lover, William.
Oh.
And Levi laughs.
William is not the most effective courtier in the play.
Well, let's take a quick tangent real quick. Like during the break, Andrew, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 54. What'd you choose?
42.
Let's see what that is, shall we?
Hi, this is Stuart Moulton, and when I'm not producing Broadway's most illustrious divas for Austin's most discriminating audiences, I listen to Offstage and On the Air at 91.7 KOOP Hornsby Austin.
There you go. Stuart Moulton, the original co-host of this show from back in the day.
Some schnookers.
And you recorded that on the streets of New York, and y'all
yes.
had a few... cocktails
and we had just gotten out of Rocky Das Musical.
Rocky Das Musical, you know, they have a
I was just regulation talking about Rocky Das Musical yesterday. They do that. Did you know they had a full size regulation boxing ring? You're
thank
right.
Thank you. That's
with
true.
Everything.
So Levi Gore,
yes.
As You Like It. You set this in the 1930s.
Yes, I did.
Talk about that decision and what that meant for you.
Reading the script, I really wanted to make the juxtaposition because anything you do with the Shakespeare text, you want to highlight the language and the world you're creating. I wanted to juxtapose the really rich court and then just have nothing of the country. And I thought that'd be a great people to see that in really come to life in the 1930s, in the Great Depression, when you still have a lot of really great wealth, but a lot of nothing. And then it just translated so well, especially with the lights that we had. Michael Lude did our lights for us. He's this wonderful, like, sepia tone with Some really cool old style Edison light bulbs. Mm-hmm. The costumes really help incent that. Our costume designer had these great like Marlon Dietrich type. She like modeled them after all these great 1930s characters. It translates really well to the time
it's
that we've
fun
had.
World.
It's a really fun world that we've created.
Yeah. And do y'all talk like 30s people?
We talk dramatic. Like.
Do you smoke?
Oh, we unfortunately you no cannot smoke in stage.
There's nothing unfortunate about that.
I didn't say that it was could be real. Like, you know, there are fake stage
nope,
cigarettes.
There are none.
It is yes, a smoking show, however.
So other than setting it in the 30s, what are some of the other takes you did on this? That
I've put it, and so there's a wrestling match that I've changed to boxing. Does that just translate more to the 1930s? And we had this wonderful fight choreographer whose boyfriend is also an actual boxer mm-hmm. who came in and taught our Orlando and our Charles the Boxer all these really cool moves that they're able to showcase in this set. So I situated all the people to like have it as a ring in this, like a bare knuckle boxing ring.
And then, so do you have a regulation size boxing ring on stage?
It's not up to scale as Rocky has, but it is.
Does it slide out over the audience?
The audience slides into it as they're watching.
Good. I was like, that's good. You didn't even expect that. You were like, nope. Shazam! That was exciting.
Well, that sounds great. And Andrew, tell us about your characters and what how you feel about them, what they do, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they're both a lot of fun. William comes on later in the show, and he's kind of there's a lot of love in this play. At the end of the play, four different couples get married. William kind of represents the line where that love maybe can't reach past. William is in love with Audrey, another character in the show, but Audrey also has caught the attention of one of the most interesting, wittiest, and dynamic characters in the show by the name of Touchstone. So when we finally do see William, William is essentially rejected by Audrey at that point and kind of humiliated a little bit by Touchstone, although it's more than worth it. The sacrifice William makes is more than worth it for the audience because it's really funny to get to see William get essentially defeated in witty verbal combat by Touchstone. So William's a bit of a comic character, and Corin is a shepherd. Corin is sort of the epitome of the folks that live in the country full time. There are some folks that were in the court who got exiled to the country. William's always been in the country. He's a shepherd. He raises sheep. He employs Silvius, who is also a shepherd. And William has a much simpler and less affected view of things in the world than some of the courtiers and the other folks who kind of talk about their philosophies of life. Corin's rules are basically keep the sheep fat, pay attention to the weather, take care of what you have, make sure you have enough to eat, and that's his life.
So how do you, as an actor, approach playing two different, relatively full roles at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Well,
like Jekyll and Hyde.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just back and forth.
A little crazy, a little straight.
You work on a formula that turns you insane and suppresses your evil during some of the... No. First thing you want to do is make sure... We have an excellent costume designer, and so she's been a tremendous help because she's created a different look for both of the characters. So you want to make sure you manage that effectively and that you can change back and forth in a timely manner. I think it's important... For me, it's been important to try and make physical choices. I can't change my physical appearance radically. I'm going to look like the same shepherdy country character no matter what, but I do my best to make different physical choices for each character, how they walk, how they stand, how they relate to the people around them. Try to make different vocal choices without going too far into the extreme so that they look and sound different and have a different presence on stage because they are very, very different. They're very, very different people.
Cool. Well, tell us about your Rosalind.
Our Rosalind is played by Katie Beth Stubbs. She's a recent transplant here to Austin. And, oh my gosh, so Rosalind is a great role in the entire canon. She has the most female lines of any other, and most of any other male characters in the entire canon. And she just, And Zude, so I wanted to really showcase how Rosalind differs when going into the forest. Because Shakespeare, the forest is all about coming alive and finding yourself. And we want to see how Rosalind finds this playful, intelligent, and very direct nature to herself as she approaches it. So we have a few looks for her. So she has this very Marlene Dietrich look, high-waisted pants, and a scat for that, a cap, not a scap.
Scaps are good. They're coming back in style.
We were just hoping. But she's, and she's, so the, in the season,
like
she.
I kind of like scap, I have to be honest with you.
And you're welcome. It's coming right on back. And the way that she just interacts with the world around her, it's really, for me personally, it's really great to watch this, how she's evolved the character and how it's really come alive in her own sense.
Awesome. Now, you guys have already opened. Mm-hmm. When do you close? How long do you play?
We have three more weekends, this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, mm-hmm. and for the next two weekends.
And where can folks go to get more information?
For more information about tickets and dates, they can go to the citytheateraustin.org.
Great. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Unfortunately, we're not having backstage at Offstage, so we're going to have to learn more about you next time you're on. Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Awesome. That was Andrew Goldberg and Levi Gore of City Theater's production of As You Like It. Play now through May 6th. For more information, citytheater.org. We will be right back.
Down in the forest, something.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro. Nick Mayo is not here. He's off getting ready for the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, which are tonight at the Long Center. For more information, thelongcenter.org. We are also just in the middle of. I believe tonight is the kickoff, but the Fusebox Festival has started here. It's at some six or seven venues around the city, and lots of really incredible things. One of the venues is Ground Floor Theater. And
where?
So, Ground Floor Theater. So I'm sitting there watching, and it's we've been working with this dance group from Japan. Kaori, oh my lord, I just forgot her last name, is doing this ballet piece, which is just wacky and incredible and beautiful.
Everything you were telling me about it before the show got me very excited. Mm-hmm.
And then we also have at Ground Floor Theater, Johnny Mercer, who's coming in from New York. And so lots of really good things happening around the city. So there's, for more information there, fuseboxfestival.org. I also wanted to highlight a show called Grounded, which is, Street Corner Arts production. You can just, you know, and this is a one-woman show starring Sarah. Oh my gosh, Sarah, forgive me. I just lost your last name.
And it doesn't say it right here. Let me click it out.
She was Sarah
Danko. Hello, Danko, Sarah.
And she was in Parade, and I should know her. I directed her for several weeks. And she's amazing. And it's been getting some good notices. Where is it playing?
It is playing at the Hyde Park Theater. Comes the story of an ace fighter pilot who, due to unexpected pregnancy, is reassigned to the Chair Force flying unmanned military drones.
And I have to say that when you look at the picture of Sarah, Sarah is a beautiful,
I'm just going to say that she's... It's a haunting, striking photo. It's interesting.
Yeah. So Sarah is a beautiful woman. I would put her on the feminine side of the scale, and this is really opposite of that. She looks tough and scary. But the show sounds great. She's been getting good notices. So I wanted to tell folks about that. I'm sure you can get information by looking up Street Corner Arts or HydeParkTheater.org. Did you have anything
else?
And
it's StreetCornerArts.org.
StreetCornerArts.org.
And it's also listed on Now Playing Austin.
There you go.
There was two things. I was excited. Well, I love that, you know, Nick Mayo's and the Violet is happening, but you had them on last week.
We did.
But Poncho Rabbit and Coyote is at Austin Scottish Rite Theater right now. How do you not love this? Poncho Rabbit meets danger in every stage of his journey to find his missing papa. But the greatest danger of all is his untrustworthy guide. I just think that is awesome.
I love anything
sauce.
To do with rabbits.
Hello, and it's Poncho Rabbit and the Coyote.
Where do people get information about that?
ScottishRiteTheater.org.
Excellent. Well, let's jump. Anything else?
ASL storytelling is going on right now.
Oh, where's that?
Theron Parker, he has three different performances. He did one last Friday at Zach. This Saturday will be at the Twin Oaks Library at 2 p.m. And then the following Sunday, the 29th, will be at Creative Action. It's ALS Storytime and ALS Games. I just
ASL.
Was like, I'm sorry. What did right? I just say?
ALS.
Oh,
it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I know, okay. But I'm dyslexic and really so, quick. But, so, yes.
And I'm sure most people here have seen ASL, and it's even if you don't know ASL, it's, and I'm sure there's some kind of thing for hearing people to understand what they're saying, but it's beautiful just to watch.
It's, yes, absolutely. So I found that pretty exciting. They have it listed on Now Playing Austin, but the official website is justmindy.com.
Awesome. Justmindy.com. All right. Today in theater history.
Dun, dun, dun. Today in theater history.
Excuse me. I had to cough. We're going to just jump right to 1977.
Tell me.
I moved to New York City.
Really?
And probably this is, I'll have to admit this. This was when I got the most familiar with Stephen Sondheim, was when Side by Side by Sondheim came out. I was not a
Sondheim person
before
that. That's shit all together.
That's
so you
everything.
Can learn a little bit of it all.
And it had Millicent Martin, Julie McKenzie, David Kernan, and Ed Sheeran in it. And it's a great, if you listen to the...
It's a good cast album.
Yeah, if you listen to the cast album, it's great. My favorite, I think, is just the very last thing when they introduce themselves. It's very, very sweet. So that happened in 1977. 20 years later, in 1994, Disney showed up on Broadway for the very first time.
They've been doing it for a while now, isn't that
Do you know what
nutty?
Show it was?
Say the name again?
Disney.
Oh, wasn't it Lion King?
Nope.
No,
that's what I thought too. It's not. There was one before Lion King.
No, was it Hercules?
So there was this show, then Lion King, then Aida.
Mary Poppins.
Beauty and the Beast.
That's
no, Mary
what it
Poppins
was.
Just
Mary
was
Poppins
10 years
was
ago.
Way afterwards, and it went in after the other theater. No, I know.
Anyway, it starred Susan Egan and Terrence Mann, and I totally forgot that Tom Bosley was in it.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. Oh, my gosh.
That's interesting.
I haven't heard the name Tom Bosley in a long time.
Well, there you go. 2002, Thoroughly Modern Millie had its revival. It's for. I'll tell you, I kept that so confused me about Thoroughly Modern Millie because it started as a movie and then became a musical.
It was, yes.
And so it did not. It's not a revival. It's its actual show with a new score by Janine Tesori and Dick Scanlon. Janine Tesori, of course, did Violet and a little show called Fun Home.
I was about to say, and the Fun Home. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it's really 2002, huh?
Yep. And it starred one Sutton Foster.
Yeah.
And in 2005, boy, I'll tell you, I just don't understand this. And Stuart Moulton and I used to argue about this, but Light in the Piazza opened. I just didn't like it.
Oh, yeah, no, we've had this whole thing. Yeah. And Chickalala loves it.
Yeah, a lot of people do. So did a whole bunch of Tony voters. So.
I know, but you and I are in this. I'm like, no.
You know what? I've got to just go to the very end because I want to make sure we have enough time for our last segment. We're just going to jump to 2017 because I talked about it before. This is the opening of Indecent. That's the story of Shalom Ash's God of Vengeance, which found its way to Broadway. The director, Rebecca Teichman, she won a Tony for directing. The lighting designer won a Tony for the lighting design. Couldn't have been more well-deserved. Katrina Link was in it. Just an amazing, amazing piece of theater. So that's it. So we're going to go away listening to a little bit of Thoroughly Modern Millie, shall we?
Oh, yes. It is a delightful.
No canary in a cage for me.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Shiro.
We are missing our Mr. Nick Mayo, so no Nick Squared. One day we'll get the band all back together
well,
again.
Well, it happened like 3 weeks ago.
It
wasn't
did.
Forever.
It did, but I know... Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards is happening tonight. He's very busy at that. I'm so upset. I had planned to go. I cannot go because I have a rehearsal. So it's terrible.
I know.
So right now at Bass Concert Hall is a little show called Book of Mormon.
What?
Book of Mormon.
This show makes me laugh.
I just adore that show.
Me too.
I was lucky enough to talk to the man that plays Elder Price. His name is Kevin Clay.
Fun role.
All
fun roles.
They're all fun roles. Actually, remember when we had, I guess it was like 3 or 4 years ago, we had the guy that played, I forgot which one.
We had Elder Cunningham last time, right?
No, maybe, but by phone. We had someone here in studio. It wasn't Elder Price. It wasn't Elder Cunningham. It was the guy that... was the gay guy.
Oh.
I forgot which elder that was.
There were a lot of elders.
He was hilarious. Well, let's just jump right in so we make sure we have enough time to hear this interview. Shall we?
Yes, let's.
Here we go.
Hello, everybody. I am lucky enough to be sitting here on the telephone with Kevin Clay. He's playing Elder Price in Broadway Across America's tour of, God, I just totally forgot the name of it. Oh, yeah, The Book of Mormon. Hey,
hello.
How are you? Did you like that little acting piece I just did?
I loved it. Had me totally convinced.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of your acting resume video piece in many ways.
Oh, my goodness. You've watched that?
Yes. It's brilliant.
Thank you. I made it in college for an English class.
Oh, so much fun. So much fun. Love the sense of humor. Especially like the martial arts dancing.
Oh, well, yeah. A perfect blending of two things I'm not very well trained in.
I don't believe that at all. You're in the Broadway tour of Book of Mormon.
That is correct.
Yes. Yeah, so that is great. I have a vague recollection of this show, Book of Mormon. What's it about?
So the show is about these two Mormon missionaries who are very oddly paired. One is the perfect classic example of a well-brought-up Mormon, and the other is sort of the opposite in the traditional sense. You know, they look very different from one another. One is very strange. One is very forthright. And the two of them are sent to Uganda for their mission. And so the entirety of the play is sort of watching them come to terms with some harsh realities of the world compared to what they know from their Salt Lake City upbringing.
Right. And it is so much fun. And when it first opened, it was the Hamilton of its day.
Oh, yeah.
Tickets were impossible to get, although I got house seats. Yeah, I know. I was one of the few, one of the lucky. So one of the things that's lovely about it, and tell me how you feel about it from your standpoint as a performer, it was really touted, and indeed I agree that it is a throwback to the Great American Musical.
Absolutely. That's a great way to describe it. Each of the songs that were written for this show, Bobby Lopez composed the music for the show. He also wrote Avenue Q and a lot of the music from Frozen now. And so he, already having experience with Avenue Q in a bit of that parody sense, sort of went to the next elevated level with this musical and said, I'm going to write each song in a way as an homage to an already existing style or specific show that exists. And it just makes it feel, I mean, you as an audience member, to me, when I watch it, I feel comfortable. And then at the same time, that's the perfect way for them to throw something at you that is completely out of left field and throws you off your balance all at the same time. And I think it's really great. When I was learning the show, each song that I would learn, they would say, okay, yeah, this song is sort of a play off of this song. Okay, now let's learn it.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Did you get the honor of working with Casey Nicola or any of the original creative team that put together the original?
I have worked with Casey. He will come out and check in on the show once or twice a year. And he'll work us really hard and make sure that the show is still in tight shape. And he is so smart, and he knows the show so well that he can come in and within a day's time just whip it right back into shape. And I think that's why it's been running really successfully all these years.
Sure. I'm going to say between you and I, if Casey works at it long enough, he may actually go somewhere.
Yeah, you know, he's hardly had any success so far. I wish the best for him in the future.
Yep, yeah, he was, you know, so I just hope he works at it. but it is a fun show, and I believe this is the third time that Book of Mormon has come here to Austin. So we're doing something right here. Have you been to Austin before?
I have not, actually. I've been with the show for 2.5 years now, but I've been to Dallas and Houston, so now Austin will be my third big city.
That's great. So you've been with the tour for quite some time. Have you been Elder Price the whole time, or did you work your way up through the ranks?
Yeah, I sort of worked my way up. I started the tour as one of the ensemble Mormons. I was Elder Smith.
And likely I was an understudy
for Elder Price. Yeah, exactly. So I did that for about a year and a half. And then one of our standbys left the company, and they asked me to become an Elder Price standby. So for 6 months, I just sat backstage waiting for the moment that
you stood
Elder Price would be out. Yeah, and that I could jump on. And then for the past 6 months, just about, I've been playing Elder Price.
Wow. And I assume you love it?
Oh, it's just, as we've already kind of been discussing, it's one of the greatest shows, I think, that's out there.
Yeah.
And so.
And it's got to be fun. I don't want to give anything away, but Elder Price goes through a lot of different levels in this show.
Yes. I think the arc that he goes through is the most drastic of any of the characters, which I love to play because it gives me as an actor and as the character so much room to grow, which I think is really nice. The audience can sort of see through me that learning process, specifically when it comes to religious understanding.
True. So what do you think? What do you say to people who may be a strong person of faith and might be a little reticent to go see this show because they've heard things that maybe they may not feel comfortable with? What do you say to them?
I always recommend this show to people who are religious, who have strong faith. I warn them that there is some heavy language and that there is, you know, there is some sacrilege to be had, but I always feel very strongly when I tell them that I think this show, in a lot of ways, is pro-faith. At the end of the show, it comes out as pro-faith in a lot of ways, in just the sense that everyone can practice and have faith in a way that makes them happy and hopefully makes the world better. And so I tell them, you know, if you can, you got to sit through the whole show to get there, because there are a lot of ups and downs, but it will get there. And especially for someone who is very faithful, I think it can be a good holding up of the mirror to look at hopefully some of their own experiences with discovery.
Well, I've always said it's irreverent, but not disrespectful.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I think our Austin audiences are going to really love seeing you guys here again. The houses have always been really good, and there's no reason to think it's not going to be. I just want some people that maybe haven't seen it to come to Bass Concert Hall and see it.
Absolutely.
What are you looking forward to doing, seeing, or eating when you're here in Austin, Texas?
Actually, that last point, that's what I was going to say. I'm always looking forward to different food everywhere that I'm going. So I'm looking for hopefully some of that classic Texas food. You know, I want to have a week of just big flavors. And it's something that we always look forward to on the road, because so often we're living in hotels or similar situations, so we don't have kitchens of our own to make food. I mean, we're always so reliant on food in the area. So I'm always looking for recommendations whenever we go to new places.
They will not let you out of the state until you've had some of our barbecue. So you got to make sure you get that. And you cannot avoid Mexican food, but breakfast tacos are the things you'll have to have as well.
Perfect. That's right on my alley.
There you go. So I hope you wrote all that down and took notes. Well, we are so looking forward to having you here. Book of Mormon, one of my favorites. I could see it over and over again, and indeed I do.
Good.
So, well, good. So great. Break a leg when you're here. This interview will be airing on, I believe, your opening night. So, so break many legs.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Well, Kevin Clay, thank you so much for being on Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. Take care.
That was Kevin Clay. He's playing Elder Price in Broadway Across America's production of Book of Mormon, playing now through April 22nd at Bass Concert Hall. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
The Book of Mormon. Mormon. Hello!
Hello!
it does just make me happy listening to
it. It was nice to sing along. I would like to do that show.
I want to
be an elder. We need to do a gender-bending version.
Can't we do a gender-bending version?
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, that was a fun interview, and it was a fun show.
It was a fun show. It is a fun show.
I did this show exactly as you like it.
See what I did there? Okay. I do see what you did there.
Well, thank you it's good to have you back in the studio.
It's nice to be back.
We will not be having Backstage at Offstage, so if you're listening on the podcast, you're done. If you're listening on the air, you're not done because you're going to stick around and listen to Austin Monitor News.
Exactly.
But remember, get the podcast on iTunes.
Stitcher.
And other places.
Offstageonair.com. Enter your name in the little mailbox, in the little box there. Click it. And we'll mailbox.
Just send it to you.
So I couldn't get that out.
We're going to walk away with a little bit of Hedgewig.
Oh, the Hedgewig?
Here's some Hedgewig.
Yes. We found sanctuary.